In today's episode of Zen Founder, Sherry interviews Cheryl Gillihan from Cause Labs. Cause Labs is a development agency. They build custom software, but they're also a B Corp, a beneficial corporation, which is a business that is allowed to do things legally that help the community and that have social impact. And it's kind of a mix. It's not a nonprofit. It's a mix between a nonprofit and a for-profit company. For-profit companies have the mandate to always maximize shareholder value, and B Corps are allowed to not necessarily do that, to sacrifice a small amount of shareholder value in the interest of doing some type of social good. And so Cause Labs builds websites, apps, and web applications to help organizations scale their impact, and they give a 33% discount to 501c3 nonprofit organizations. So it's a very interesting company, you know, with a unique mission and really unique, I think, in the tech space. So today, Sherry talks with Cheryl Gillihan, the CEO of Cause Labs, talks to her about her origin story and, you know, about what she's up to with Cause Labs. So I hope you enjoy today. But before we dive in, if you haven't left us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, we'd love to hear from you, even if you just click the 5-star. But if you can write a sentence or two, that's great too. That's how new people find us, and we're looking to grow our listenership. So would really appreciate it if you feel like we've given something to you. Appreciate it if you would give back. And for now, let's dive in to the interview with Cheryl. We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I'm also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Hey, so by way of introduction, would you just say a little bit about how you spend your days? What is your job?
So I am the CEO of Cause Labs. I've been the CEO since November of 2016, but I've been with the company since 2010. So I've been with the company a while. Do you want to know more about just like my day-to-day?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
So most of my days I spend in front of the computer. I have a completely distributed and virtual team, and one of the ways that works really well is that we all use the same working hours, even if we're in the different time zones. But being the CEO now, a lot of my job is being out and about and networking and meeting people and just having presence at the different places where our market is. And that is primarily at nonprofit conferences, nonprofit events. We work mostly with nonprofits and social enterprises. And so a lot of my role is just being present and in those spaces. So I do a lot of traveling, but when I'm not traveling, I do get to work from home and do a lot of screen time.
And have somewhat of a 8-to-5, 9-to-5 kind of work life when you're home?
I would say I have, yes, for the most part, because we do want that overlap with our team members, regardless of where they are, and overlap with our clients. And they have a typical 8-to-5, 9-to-5 job. However, I think that there's a lot of flexibility there. So having a distributed team, as well as being able to work from home, I don't have that hour-long commute in the mornings. So my days are a little bit more relaxed. I don't have to wake up at the crack of dawn to get in my meditation time and my morning coffee. It's really easy for me to sleep in and still get that time before I start my day. All I have to do is walk to the kitchen and then walk to my office. I do have a dedicated office space so that I can have some separation, but I would say that I don't really compartmentalize my life, and I don't necessarily compartmentalize how I bring myself to different occasions and different things.
So in addition to your role at Cause Labs, you and your husband, Michael, founded Purpose WP. So how did those two, like, are you still working in the other business, or how did those fit together for you?
So we definitely work with the same market. He also works with nonprofits and helping them scale their their nonprofits, but he works with them at a smaller scale. So more of a local nonprofit, smaller nonprofit. They're not necessarily building custom applications, which is what CauseLabs does. So we work with the same audience, but we work with them in different ways. So it allows for a lot of collaboration between the two of us, even though we're leading separate businesses. So sometimes I joke he's my competition, but he's not really. We work together a lot. We started Purpose WP before I became the CEO of CauseLabs, and it wasn't long before. And so when I did approach the previous CEO and told him, hey, my husband and I have started this new business. I just wanted to let you know. I didn't want you to find out on my LinkedIn and have some questions and think that I'm leaving the company. I'm very invested in CauseLabs and I'm not going anywhere, but I do want you to know that we're getting more involved in our local community and this is one of the ways that we're doing it. And Michael and I are really wanting to work together. And I did sort of lay out for them and also in my own mind that there is some sort of roadmap here of like a transition or a succession plan for my role, because one, I wasn't really going anywhere else in the company. I was sort of right under the CEO job wise. And that wasn't necessarily the reason I would have left. It was more that Michael and I really want to work together. And so there was this plan of like, if we are going to live the life that he and I want, then it is a world where we work together and we can do things together and have business goals together. And so that definitely was in the cards and in the plan that I was thinking about, like, at what point do I leave CauseLabs so that I can be full-time with Purpose WP?
But it went the other direction.
Went the other direction. So
what was it like to resign from the, or not resign necessarily, but sort of have that conversation with your husband and say, hey, remember how we were going to build this thing together? Well, I'm going to be over here building something and you can be here building something.
That was a challenge, definitely. So he certainly has built it on his own and he has done a great job. And not that I'm not there to support him. In fact, when we're around town, people just know us as the Gillihans because we're always together and we're always sort of talking about the same things. In fact, I don't think people know that we run different businesses because we're so aligned in how we talk to people and what we want for the partners that we have. And so that initial conversation, though, the founder had come to me the Friday before I was leaving for vacation and asked me if I would take over as CEO of the company. And I said, you realize I'm like going out of the country and I'm going to be completely disconnected for 7 days and that you're just springing this on me and wanting a decision right now. And I don't know if I can give you that. And so I asked him if I had time, you know, during my vacation and my downtime to really think about this decision and to make a good decision, one that was good for me, one that was good for my family, one that would be good for the business. And when I came back the following Monday, I did accept the position, as you can see now. But that week was actually the week that I met you, Sherry, at Cabo Press for the first time, I think. And I arrived, I was supposed to be a plus one for this adventure. It was supposed to be a week in Cabo on the beach with some margaritas. I was supposed to be having some downtime, vacation time, because work was, you know, really stressful with business development. And it did not turn out that way. You know, I was fortunate that it was not a traditional vacation and that I was surrounded by founders and leaders of other organizations that I could really lean on and get some advice from. And I got some really sound advice that helped me in those first few weeks and months of starting the business, or sort of kickstarting the business.
Taking over. Yeah. And you have been, I mean, you've won numerous awards in your local community and you've been written up in Forbes. I mean, there's, you know, I feel like my news feed is often full of like people celebrating the work that you have done with CauseLabs and in other activities that you're involved in. And as you kind of reflect back on your life, think about maybe your childhood, your early life, was this sort of an easy to foretell future? Like, is it clear that you would have taken this kind of business leadership path?
I've always been tenacious. And I think part of that has been from my mother and her work ethic and what she expected of me. And so just delving a little bit into my past, my mother was a single mother when I was born. My father had been stationed in Korea and didn't quite know about me yet when I was born. And so for the first 2 years, he wasn't even around. And I was living in poverty, and I didn't know that, but what my mother had to go through and what she experienced. And then, you know, my father coming back, and when they finally got married when I was six, and coming to America and having sort of this world of opportunities opened up to me, I didn't know what that meant, but my mother knew what that meant. And I think she really instilled that in me, in everything that she expected of me. You know, I had to make straight A's. I had a certain path that she was wanting me to follow. And I didn't follow her path, but I did learn a lot of lessons from her. I learned from her work ethic. I learned from her tenacity. I learned from her generosity. And so I think that the person that I am today and how I've been shaped has definitely been as a result of everything that my mother has gone through, and everything that I've experienced because of what she's gone through.
How does she feel about what you do now?
Well, she didn't know what I do for a long time.
Is she no longer with you?
No, she is. She is. She lives not very far from me. I would love for her to move in with me. but when I joined the company in 2010, she didn't really she's not very tech savvy, so she didn't really understand what I do. And so I was very fortunate that the first work trip that I took with Cause Labs was for one of our projects in rural India. And we were translating scripture into a language that was a dying language and that had never been written before. So it was a really unique opportunity because it touched on some of my background and history with linguistics and doing that in the military, as well as touching on technology, which is something that I was really passionate about and interested in and how it could change the world. And then also it took me into places that reminded me of my childhood. And so I got to visit this orphanage in a village in India, in Katihar, and the kids were just so wonderful and so happy. And it made me realize that poverty is not, where happiness is not a monetary thing. Like, people could be living in poverty and still experience this full and rich and wonderful life. It just depends on, you know, who you're around and who you're surrounded by and who's lifting you up and what opportunities are given to you. And so it reminded me of the fact that, you know, I sort of grew up that way. I remember not having indoor plumbing, for example, but I never associated that with being poor. And when I came home and I told my mother the story of visiting the orphanage and how some of these kids were sponsored and they weren't necessarily all orphans, they were semi-orphans, meaning that for one reason or another, the breadwinner of the family, usually the father, has passed away or is no longer with them and couldn't provide for them, and the mother couldn't provide for the family on her own. And so they would be part of this orphanage community. And she said, "Do you know that you were one of those children?" And I'm 33, I think, when I'm telling my mother this story, and I've never heard this before. I had never known that I was sponsored by the Pearl S. Buck Foundation. I had never known that, you know, when I was 18 months old, I would have died without the medical care that my sponsors had provided for me. And so it was really powerful that the work that I was doing had sort of brought me full circle and brought me to where I felt like I needed to be. And that I was serving the same community that at one point in my life, you know, I needed.
I mean, what an incredible moment of realizing the way that you had come full circle without even seeking that out, without intentionally deciding, I'm going to kind of reconnect with some experiences that were similar to what I had when I was a child. But I just sense a real like humility and gratitude in seeing that difference and in what you were able to provide and how you were able to serve, even given where you had come from.
Mm-hmm. I was fortunate that I was raised in a faith community as well, and that my grandmother, you know, put me in a wonderful church that guided me and taught me a lot. And my mother just was generous and loving and caring the whole time and always giving me the opportunities and saying that I could do anything that I wanted to and be anything that I wanted to be. So I had two really strong women in my life as I was growing up. And so I was fortunate in that respect. And I think that it sort of naturally led me on a path to be generous and giving and seeking nonprofit work. In fact, when I got out of the military, I stayed at home with my children for 7 years until both of them were in school. And it was challenging to re-enter the workforce when you've been a stay-at-home mom for that long. So I actually went back and finished my degree and got it in nonprofit management, thinking I have been volunteering all these 7 years. And on my resume, that's all I had was volunteer experience because it had been 7 years since I worked officially in the workspace. And I thought that I wanted to work for a nonprofit. And when I started applying for nonprofit positions, because I hadn't been in the workspace for 7 years, the only thing available were entry-level nonprofit positions. Well, they don't get paid anything.
Right.
It's unfortunate, but it's the reality. They don't get paid very much, and you work there because your heart has led you to it. And I am so grateful for the people that are able to do that. But with, you know, a mortgage and trying to pay that as well as raise two children and Michael soon getting out of the military himself, you know, I needed a larger income to be able to support our family. And it just was a challenging time to try to figure that out. But I think that, like I said, I've been surrounded by a great community, and my faith community, and another woman in my life gave me an opportunity to work for her company, which was V-Rooms. It was a due diligence data room and really got me back into technology. And that was sort of my stepping stone to reestablish that I could be a businesswoman and that I could be successful in anything that I tried to do.
In some ways, your experience is unique for many ways, but this sense of being really pulled up by other women is somewhat unusual in the sense that there haven't always been women in power to do the pulling up, but you had these advocates, of course, in your mother and grandmother, but then in this early opportunity to jump back in and be nurtured as a professional by a woman who saw potential in you.
Yes, absolutely. And so that, I think that is a big thing of what I try to do now also is lift up other women. There are several women that I mentor, and there is no one path. I mean, I couldn't draw a roadmap for somebody, but I think it's more of helping them recognize where their talents are and helping them recognize that they are capable and that they are enough.
How did your experiences in the military shape who you've become as a leader and an entrepreneur?
For one thing, it proved to me that I could definitely do more than I expected. I could not do a single push-up when I joined basic training. And by the end of it, I was doing 42 in 2 minutes, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So it proved to me that if I set my mind to something, I can get it done. So the fact that I'm out of shape now is my own fault because I know that I can do those things. I know that I can run 2 miles. I know that it's just a matter of willpower and motivation and really wanting to get those things done. So the things that I want to get done now are the things related to my business, and I'm very capable and I know that I can get them done. In fact, when I first took over the company, we were sort of in a position where we were financially unstable and we needed about $100,000. And I had a very transparent meeting with the whole entire team. And during that town hall, I said, this is not a problem. It's $100,000. Cause Labs is a very successful company. We have great partners. We have $100,000 for lunch. It depends on who we're having lunch with, but that's not a big deal. They were amazed that I could come out there. I mean, $100,000 is a lot of money for any organization and for anybody. But I just had such confidence in our partners and such confidence in our team and the quality of work that we do and the track record of the work that we had done in the past that I knew that we would work it out. And this was in January of 2016. So obviously it worked out because we're still here. But yeah, I think that it's a matter of perspective on whether or not you can accomplish things. And that's something that I learned in the military.
And you worked as a linguist, right? So you have been fluent in 4 languages throughout the course of your life?
I have been fluent in 4 languages at some point in time. I'm only fluent in English now, but I have an elementary understanding of a lot of the other languages. My first language was actually Tagalog because I'm from the Philippines, but my mother ensured that I would learn English. And so she would no longer speak that in the house with me after we moved to America when I was 6. So I don't really remember that language very much. And I guess my fluency of that language would have been, you know, at an elementary level anyway, because I was so young. But English being, you know, what I consider my first language now, Turkish would have been the next language that I learned. We lived there for 3 years and we didn't live on base. We lived off base when my father worked there. And so I learned Turkish fluently when we lived there because we were interacting with the community a lot. And then when I was in the military, they taught me Arabic and was so fluent in Arabic that I think more so than Turkish even, because I was dreaming in Arabic and speaking in my sleep in Arabic. I was translating from Arabic to English when I would speak to Michael. So I would say that even now, Arabic is my second language.
It lives in your head. Wow. And how, I mean, you've had all this exposure to different cultures, to different ways of living, to different people, different languages. How does that filter through your work? How does that shape who you are?
I think it's one of the things that drew me to CauseLabs because we did do a lot of international development work as well. But even when we're working with domestic nonprofits and social enterprises, we're working in the social sector where we're talking about diversity and inclusion and equity and human rights. And so all of these things are very relevant to the cultural experiences that I've had as I've traveled the world and also being sort of at different economic levels throughout my life and the exposure that I've had. I feel like I have a more open-minded perspective and can come to conversation with one of our partners with a lot of empathy, because I may not necessarily know the situation that their clients are dealing with, but I have been in some of those situations. And so I know that the realm of possibility of what someone can be experiencing. So I don't necessarily look at homelessness as a negative thing, that somebody has done anything wrong. Like there's possibilities of displacement or abuse in their childhood. And now, you know, they're in the situation that they're in. So I always know that there's a story behind the problem that these people are facing. And I think that my empathy has led a lot to the success of what we've been able to do at CauseLabs, because a lot of what we do is very relational and really understanding the problems that we're trying to solve.
So you can make a lot more money in the potentially in the private sector, or, you know, working with organizations that have big dollars to spend on their websites or on their software packages. I think this is sort of an obvious question given what we've already talked about, but why nonprofits? I mean, why not use your tremendous skills to make as much money as you can and then be generous as you see fit? Like why invest your career in nonprofits, which are sometimes very slow to get going? They don't have lots of money to spend. They can be, you know, difficult enterprises to be involved with.
I would agree with all of those things, but I also think that the reason that I serve this industry is particularly because of those things. They deserve just as much access to the technology that is changing people's lives. I think they deserve the same level of enterprise level software that those bigger businesses are using. Certainly our work is not free. We're not giving away the work that we're doing, but it is certainly discounted so that our nonprofits can afford it, because technology is helping people transform the world and helping people transform people's lives. And I don't believe it should necessarily be about profit. It should be about the purpose of why we're doing things and why we're using things, and keeping in mind sort of the unintended consequences even of how we build things and how we're implementing technology to make sure that we're doing no harm. And I think because it's an underserved market is the reason that I'm working there. It's to give them the opportunities that other organizations are not necessarily giving them.
When you feel, if you feel, I assume you do, there are moments when you feel discouraged or fearful or just, you know, concerned about the state of the world. What do you tell yourself? What kind of lessons or mantras or comforting words do you return to in your darker moments?
Well, prayer is definitely one of my refuges and the way that I sort of let go of the things that I can't control. And so that is, I grew up a worrier because my mother was a worrier, but I have been trying very hard throughout my life to recognize what is out of my hands. And so trying not to worry about those things and giving them to God has been really helpful for me. But, you know, there are other things. I mean, leaning on my support system and leaning on my husband, leaning on my family has been a huge help for me. But also I have a therapist, and there have been, even before I became CEO, because the business development role at the company, especially in the financial position we were in before I took over, was very stressful. And it's more so when I became CEO. I believe that there's just a level of not necessarily wanting to dump that on my family and my spouse, and having sort of an objective perspective from someone who would just listen and help me talk through things and help me get them out of my head, because I'm certainly more critical on myself than anybody else is, and more critical than I would be to anyone. And so having that person that would allow me to vent that and help me talk through things and think through things and move forward in a way that was positive and healthy and not destructive is really beneficial for me.
Kind of the space where you don't have to have it all together.
Yes. Because no one has it all together all the time.
Sure. Yeah. You've been a highly successful daughter of a very, you know, sort of powerful driven mother, and you're also raising daughters. Do you have any sort of hopes for them entering entrepreneurship or technology, or what are the paths you're plotting?
I would love for them to, but my mother paved a path for me that I totally did not follow, and I knew that my girls wouldn't follow it if I tried.
Okay.
And so I've tried not to be that kind of mother. I've tried not to sort of enforce my dreams on them and to really chase after my own dreams and lead by example. And hopefully through the work that I'm doing, they are gaining some level of empathy and awareness of sort of global issues and things that we're dealing with in our society, and having their own opinions about that. I really appreciated when my daughter was in high school and took debate class, and they would debate about, you know, current topics like, should marijuana be legalized? And you know, should we have gay marriage and things like that? So having her being able to come home and have those conversations with me and ask me, you know, what's your stance on this? What's your position? How do you feel? How would your company feel about this? What's the type of work that you're doing in this area? As well as being able to even potentially, you know, introduce them to people who are working in that space, if she was interested in getting involved in that. I mean, I think that's been a huge benefit of my work, is that I work with a lot of amazing people. And it's pretty cool to be able to say, yeah, I would love to introduce you to, you know, someone who works on the National Task Force for LGBTQ, because she's the president of her GSA club at school. And she's an introvert, so she didn't take me up on that. But I mean, it's really, I don't know. It feels pretty cool for me to feel like, yeah, I could directly connect you to somebody who's working in that field. And so they know that if they wanted to go in that direction, I have a network that could help them.
Such a neat thing to be able to offer your kids. So what's next for you? What are you learning about? What are you scheming? How are you growing?
So I've been CEO at Cause Labs for about a year and a half now, and Michael still has Purpose WP. So I think there is, you know, a world in which we partner more closely together, but also I'm thinking about the fact that, you know, I have to have a succession plan. When I took over the position at Cause Labs, spoke with one of my mentors, and I asked her, how long is too long to be CEO of a company? So even when I first accepted the position, I was thinking about, like, when am I going to be ineffective in this role? And knowing that, you know, I couldn't be the CEO forever, and thinking about how do I plan for the success of the company even after I'm gone. And so that's definitely weighing heavily on my mind, in that there's probably a 5 to 7 year roadmap there. And so thinking about what that succession plan looks like, and always being mindful of, am I being productive? Am I effective in the way that I'm growing this company? And should I still be here? So evaluating myself just as I would evaluate anybody on my staff as well.
Well, it's exciting. I can't wait to hear what unfolds for you in the coming months and years. And yeah, anything I've neglected to ask you about that's important, or any sort of last thoughts or ideas that you want to say about what you've learned over the course of your journey?
So I was thinking about this the other day, and somebody else had asked me a similar question. And I think the answer that I have for you is one that's not related to work. It's actually related to marriage. Michael and I are celebrating 20 years this year, and it has not been easy all of the years, as marriage never is. There are definitely bumpy times there. And I think one of the reasons that it was a real challenge is because I am this sort of tenacious, driven, confident, independent woman. And I never wanted to change that about myself. And so I feel like I spent many years like proving to him I didn't need him, and proving like, hey, I can do this on my own. Like, I don't need you. And of course, that made him feel like he wasn't needed, huh? Imagine that. And so I think just one of the greatest lessons that I can give to women who are like me is that you don't have to change who you are, and you can recognize and realize that maybe you don't need your partner, but you want them, and you need them in a different way, not necessarily to take care of you, but just to be there for you and to be your best supporter, to be your best friend. And there's a different level and sort of need there. And so when I figured that out, our marriage got a lot better and our friendship got a lot better, because I was no longer trying to prove myself. And part of it was that as I was growing up, I was trying to prove myself to my mother and to my father and to myself and to him and to everybody else in the world. And when you reach the point of like recognizing that you don't have to live up to something and that you can just be who you are, everything just falls into place and gets a lot easier.
So there's this end of needing to prove yourself, and that opens up this possibility of deep relationship and friendship, and also the freedom to do the work that's most meaningful without needing everyone to see and comment and acknowledge it.
And I think that's where true success really starts to happen.
That it really intrinsically matches you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lovely. That feels complete to me. Does that feel complete to you?
That does.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.